Summer Sundays are meant for freshly cut grass, ballpark dogs, and the best baseball talk you can find. So kick back with your bacon and eggs and pour yourself a mimosa while Phillies announcer Greg Murphy and Green Legion Radio's Chris Sack break down your fighting fills and take you around the league right now on Baseball Brunch.
Play ball!
Good evening, Philadelphia, and welcome into Bud Light Baseball Brunch powered by Green Legion Radio, 102.5 Fox Sports The Gambler, 104.1 in the Trenton area, and WDAS AM around the rest of the Delaware Valley. Or you can simply download that iHeartRadio app and you can listen to Murph and myself anywhere, crystal clear, worldwide. Speaking of worldwide, my partner has been to here, there, and everywhere and back again over the last few weeks. I'm Chris Sack of Green Legion Radio, and I'm happy to be doing this once again here, a postseason edition of Bud Light Baseball Brunch alongside my partner in crime and the world traveler himself, Murph. What's going on, buddy?
Yeah, how you doing, Sack? Yeah, you're right. I think we've been globetrotting for postseason wins. We found, six of them so far. And well, hopefully we can find seven more, Topper. And get this thing all wrapped up. It's been a wild ride, as you can imagine. But as exhausting as it's been, it has been exhilarating too. And with each stop and with every little bit of success this team continues to have, man, oh man, I wouldn't trade it in for anything.
Yeah, but first of all, my apologies to our fans for last week not having a show. I think everybody was looking forward to more and more of Bud Light Baseball Brunch and hearing from Murph as, you know, all these excursions go across the globe with the Phillies searching for more and more playoff wins. But I just figured last week was probably a good time to allow Murph to rest. You had been on the week for close to 2 weeks straight. Washington, D.C. to Houston to St. Louis to Atlanta. I figured it would probably be a good idea just to give you a break, let you settle in, let you sleep in your own bed for a couple nights before I, you know, I always say bother you, you know, like, hey, Murph, you want to do this? You want to hop on and do the show? But, you know, at the end of the day, I figured it'd be a good idea to, you know, let you just sit back, relax, get yourself ready for those two games in, Citizens Bank Park, first postseason games. Down there at Citizens Bank Park for the first time in 11 years. Murph, I can speak from my point of view as a fan's point of view. And I know even though you're a broadcaster for the team, you have a fan's point of view as well. But from where I was at in standing room only behind section 314 and to experience game three of that NLDS series against the Braves, I've been saying this for the last week because people have been asking what it's been like, what the experience was like. And I've been privied, Murph, over the last, you know, since 1993, my dad brought me to a game in 1993, game two of the NLCS against the Braves, which was, you know, they got blown out. But it was awesome when you're 7 years old to be at a postseason game. But collectively, I've been to 17 postseason games, 14 of them at the bank. And I say this, from first pitch to last pitch, it was the loudest I've ever heard the bank during a postseason game. Yes, I was at Victorino's Grand Slam, but that was a moment. After that, there wasn't much left after that. I was at Roy Halladay's postseason no-hitter, and there was a lot of tension in the stands. And yes, when he made a final out in the seventh and the eighth innings, it got loud. And when he got the last out of the game, it was really loud. But from first pitch to last pitch, the energy, the juice in that building last Friday night was something I will never forget. It was a moment in time, but 3.5 hours of a moment in time. It was phenomenal, Murph. I want to hear from your point of view as a broadcaster and what you and your colleagues both felt, because I know you guys felt the same feels that we all had.
Yeah, you know, exactly what you just said. We talked about the Shane Victorino game. We talked about the no-hitter, the perfect game for Roy Halladay. Those, and again, and you used the right word, those were moments in those games where it erupted, and it was pretty special. What was incredible about the first two games in this series, and it was both games, is from the first inning to the last inning, it was this fever pitch. And, you know, it's been a long time since the Phillies have had postseason baseball in Philadelphia, since the fans have had anything like that to cheer about. And, man, oh, man. You know, I think they came out and they did what we expected them to do and more. And, you know, I talked to virtually every player in that clubhouse and they were dumbfounded with the amount of energy that was brought by the fans. And if you think that they don't feed off of that, well, you're wrong, because they do. You can't help but feed off of it. I think even as broadcasters, we feed off of that. You feel the energy. I was feeling it in the pregame show down in my on the concourse and watching the folks go by, and they're banging on the windows and they're holding up their signs. And you can't help but feel energized. And it's human nature, right? You're feeding off of what everyone else is giving you. So the players used it to their advantage. And it was tremendous. When Reese hit that home run, I have never been in a place that rocked quite like that at a sporting event. So, and it just kept on going. So, yeah, it was awesome. I think collectively we all agree that that was about as loud as we've ever heard Citizens Bank Park, or even the Vet, for that matter. And the Vet was, 50,000 plus. It was amazing. It was amazing.
Yeah, it was so much fun being a part of that. And the team is going to need that again for us. I know that, like, we did a show a couple weeks ago. You were in St. Louis at the workout. And, me and you got to meet up before game two, which was, man, I'll tell you what, getting into that ninth inning and, it was tight sphincter time. I'm sitting there. I'm looking at my wife. We've been leading this the whole game, because we got to sit third baseline. And I know I told you where we were sitting, Murph, but that home run by Harper, the second it left his bat, I thought it was heading for the gateway arch. It was a shot. We're going to talk about another shot coming up here in a little bit, because you got to witness that one. But that was a lot of fun. And I just remember after the game, listen, I'm not one to talk a lot of crap. I'm one to be, I like to be, one of those fans that people gravitate towards. And we had a good group over there. I only got the middle finger twice in St. Louis.
Not bad.
But I was ecstatic after the game, and I was telling them, I came there to see through that Albert Pujols and Yadier Molina retired, and mission was accomplished. They're no longer around. It's to be seen with Wainwright whether we're going to put him into retirement or not, but I think he'll be back. But that was a lot of fun. The Atlanta series was also a great time. We had that phenomenal first game where we had to hold on at the end after that 3-run shot to Matt Olson. We got a little unlucky in game two, and then we just talked about games three and four and advancing on, because now we're in the National League Championship Series, and that's where we're going to go into right now. Because the first two games of the series are nothing short of storylines, Murph. And as we turn the series back over to Philadelphia, there's going to be a lot more to transpire over these next few days. Because this year in the second 7-game series, there's no rest day. There's no travel day between games 5 and 6. Mm-hmm. Now, is that – I know they're trying to condense everything down with the season, and because they had to start late, Murph, but – in the World Series, there's two travel days, I believe. There's that Sunday, and then there's that Thursday, the 3rd. So we're not going to have to worry about that in the World Series. It's just in the League Championship Series where they're only getting the off day between 2 and 3 in both of the series.
Yeah, that's right. And it has everything to do with the lockout. I don't think it'll be that way next year. I think they'll have built-in travel days. As it is, we're going to end the season, sometime in the late first part of the week of November. We catch a little bit of a break, I think, in that baseball, in that it appears to me, and I know it's early, but at least half the World Series could be indoors, obviously, in Houston. And that's a positive, because the weather in November in the Northeast is troublesome. So if it's a Phillies-Yankees World Series, not only is it going to be cold, there's a greater chance for weather and delays and that kind of thing. So at least if Houston were to advance to the World Series, you're going to play 4 of those games, if you go 7, down there in Houston under the roof. I think that's a positive. But, yeah, it's unfortunate that the season started in the lockout, and they needed to, in order to play 162, they needed to get to that point. But it is what it is. Both teams are dealing with the same thing. The American League, actually, a little bit more of a disadvantage because they missed that final day of the NLDS. And had to play that a day late. So, maybe a slight advantage at this point for the National League, depending on how long these series go. No travel day in the NLCS is, and, we're talking about West Coast travel too. So, we'll leave here and on Sunday, if we need to play a game 6, and head back to California, get there pretty late, you know, with the time change helps a little bit, but then you're up and playing an afternoon game on that next day. So it's going to be a challenge. It's going to be a challenge indeed. But again, both teams have to do the exact same thing. The travel's the same for both teams, so no real advantage one way or the other.
Plus, at the same time, too, because there's no off day in between 5 and 6, that means that the Game 3 starter can't start on full rest in Game 7. So, you know, if this does go 7, and the Phillies have never played in a Game 7, and that's kind of the reason why before we went on air, you know, Sam and I were talking, and, you know, so – you know, Quimby the other day, he asked me, he's like, hey, I'll see you on Tuesday night. And I was like, well, that's game one on the NLCS. I won't, you know, I figured I'd save you some money. I won't go to the show. And he smacked me and he's like, no, he's like, this is your week. You're going to be there. I was like, okay, cool. I guess you don't want to save money. I'll be at the casino with you and I'll be hanging out. And then, I was saying to Sam that they're coming back from Punta Cana this upcoming Tuesday, the night that would be game 7. Wow. And, you know, so I have to host a show if Quimby's not going to make it on time, if he has any delays in flights. So I'm just going to be sitting there doing a show. I'm going to be looking at Dave Spadaro and be like, Dave, talk. Irving Fryer, talk. You know, whoever our guest is, talk. And I'm going to be watching the game on the TV. I'm going to be so distracted. And that's why I said, I don't know what to do with my hands. It was like Ricky Bobby and Talladega Nights. I don't know what to do with my hands. That's kind of where I was at. That's what I'll be doing if that's the case. But
no doubt about it. I mean, you know, you don't come this far to miss the game 7. So I would imagine Irving Fryer and Dave Spadaro have a passing interest in game 7 as well. So maybe between the three of you, you can figure out a way to talk football but watch baseball all at the same time.
Yeah, I know. Well, Dave was saying the other day, he was like, because we've gotten to know each other since we started doing player shows in 2019, and he knows how long I, you know, since we've met, how much I've rode with this team, I've died with this team, and how much it's killed me in those Septembers and Octobers where we haven't made it. And he told me the other day, he's like, Zach, he's like, I'm so happy for you. He's like, because you've wanted this. You've waited for this. And 11 years has been a long time, Murph. And I'm sitting there. I look back at these National League Championship Series in my lifetime. How odd is it that the Phillies always seem to run into an NL West team? I mean, you know, the Atlanta Braves were an NL West team in 93. 08 and 09 was NL West with the Dodgers. 2010 was NL West with the Giants. And here we are with the San Diego Padres in 2022. I guess the Central doesn't want to step up and try and take us down.
Yeah, well, that says a lot about the Central, first and foremost. But, hey, most of those NL West showdowns went the Phillies' way. So, you know what? Why mess with a good thing? As long as the Giants aren't there, I guess we're in pretty good shape against these NL West teams. So, look, I think the path to where the Phillies have gotten has been pretty favorable for the Phillies, at least in terms of teams that you felt like you matched up against. Certainly, Cardinals are a good team. Phil's able to dispatch them. The Atlanta Braves, an excellent team, defending world champs and playing about as good a baseball as anybody was playing when the Phil's got together with them, able to dispatch them as well. And there's no reason to think that they can't cool off this red-hot Padres team too. You know, I know it feels like a missed opportunity in game two, and it certainly was. But, you know, the Phillies have been there before. Just as recently as against the Braves, where you're flying high with the win in game one, you fall back a little bit with the loss in game two. But now you're coming home to that energized crowd, a place where the Phillies play well. And I think a lot of people are sleeping on Ranger Suarez. Look, I know they're going to run into a tough customer with Musgrove, but Ranger Suarez, when he is on, he's as good as anybody in baseball. And he was pretty good the last time out, and I think we can expect a pretty good Ranger Suarez coming out the next time as well.
Can we get an ear check on Musgrove before game three, immediately here?
You can bet that that's going to happen. I would be shocked first of all, it was too big of a national story for baseball to ignore it, right? You know, they're going to have to be a little proactive when it comes to that. And the Phillies, you know, they know what's up. They see the same thing everybody else does. So whether they put that bug in the umpire's ear before the game, quietly, who knows? We'll probably never know. But it wouldn't shock me. You know, it's gamesmanship just like anything else.
Suarez and Joe Musgrove, this is their second matchup of the season. They pitched well. Like, they pitched against each other. Suarez won that outcome. I think Musgrove got smacked around a little bit for 6 or 7 runs in that game. So, you know, Suarez is not a stranger to that lineup, but I also think that was before they added Juan Soto and Josh Bell to that lineup. But I think turning around Bell, making him a right-handed hitter instead of a left-handed hitter is more of an advantage for the Phillies from that context. But let's dive into game one here real fast. So Zach Wheeler was on the mound. Like, there wasn't a lot of stuff that came out of that game because it was a tight game. The Phillies only had a few hits. There was a one hitter going against the San Diego Padres, but Zach Wheeler, dominant, lights out, 7 innings pitched. There was a stat. I'll dig it up while you talk about it because you were there at the game. But Zach Wheeler, just another phenomenal postseason performance that he has had, and it's just like every single time you need a big win. Like, I know Nola had a rough game too. We'll elaborate on that in the second segment. But you know, you turn to these two and they tend to slam the door shut on the opposition. And what Zach Wheeler did in that game was just nothing short of phenomenal. And the offensive production, Bryce Harper with a shot out to left field off Yu Darvish. And then the bomb of all bombs. We thought Matt Stairs into the night was into the night. I thought Kyle Schwarber's home run was going to actually hit the moon. Why don't you talk about those three guys and what you saw from the broadcast booth out there in San Diego?
Yeah, well, first of all, I think it all started with Zach Wheeler. You know, when you're able to roll a guy out like Wheeler in that situation, your team just feels confident, you know, going into that game first and foremost. A little shaky in the first. He admits that he was kind of, you know, amped up and the adrenaline was flowing and even a little bit of nerves. He said afterwards, look, I don't normally get nervous. I was a little nervous. I'm human, you know. It was a big moment. It was obviously the biggest start of his career, and Zach Wheeler did exactly what you hoped he would do. Settled down after that first inning. I think the stat was he threw 24 or 27 pitches in the first inning.
I think it was 24.
And then didn't throw double digits again until the fourth or fifth, and that was 12 pitches, and he backed it up with 12 pitches the next inning. He was just efficient, outstanding, pitching to contact when he needed to, getting a strikeout when he needed to. Defense behind him was really good. So it was awesome to watch. And it's not as though Yu Darvish was pitching poorly. He pitched excellent as well. You know, he's just a tough luck loser at that point because the Phils able to get those two solo home runs. The first from Bryce Harper that just got out. You talk about putting one up in the air. That thing was up there forever. I think Scott Francis' call from bat to over the fence was probably about 12 seconds long. That's how long it took for the ball to get out. Excuse me one sec. I'm going to cough.
So which means Bryce was probably rounding third if it was 12 seconds before.
Yeah, it really was. It was nuts how long it was. But and then you talk about the Schwarber, which was the complete opposite. That ball was just absolutely destroyed. There's been a lot of conversation about, you know, the magnitude and the historic part of that home run. But, yeah, to see it live, to watch that thing leave the ballpark, I mean, obviously off the bat, you know, it was a home run. It was just a matter of where it was going to land. And 488 feet later, we had never seen – no one had ever seen a ball hit into the second level in right field in San Diego. The way it's tiered there is the first level, you know, comes down, slopes down to the wall to the field. The second level starts about two-thirds of the way back above. It's not like an overhang. It's way back and then slopes up after that. Those seats are far, far away. One of the Padres broadcasters said, even in all the games that Barry Bonds played there, even in batting practice, he's never hit one up there. And Schwarber able to do it during the game. So, for Schwarber's part, he said, I didn't care if it landed in the first row because it still counts the same. But it was fun to watch. And I think it really kind of fired up his teammates as well. They were psyched to see it.
Yeah, Pat Gallen, he put something out. He took a video from that seat. That is a shot and a half. And, like, I had people texting me. They're like, you know, that ball had a family. Like, you know, yeah. Schwarber should be, you know, like, he should be arrested for murder. It was just, like, it was that 87-mile-per-hour cutter or that just came over the plate. And he just drilled it. It was just amazing to see that kind of power. I mean, we've been privileged in this town to see, like, you know, the likes of, you know, for you, Michael Jack Schmidt, But on our side of things, like in my most recent time over the last 25 years, Jim Thome and Ryan Howard, of course, and Bryce Harper, what Schwarber did was nothing short of incredible. But I got some other things I want to talk about Zach Wheeler, but let's go ahead. Let's get ourselves to a break here. And then we'll talk a little bit more about game one, and then we'll dive into game two, because I had a little bit of concerns coming out of that one right there. But, you know, if you have concerns about, you know, your insurance, you got to go to your local State Farm agent, which combines good neighbor service with surprisingly great rates. You could combine your home and auto, and guess what you'll get? That's right. Good neighbor service with surprisingly great rates. In fact, State Farm agent Dave Avuso is your go-to agent for the service you deserve at the price you want. So try combining home and auto today. State Farm agent Dave Avuso will help you mix and match things perfectly. You could call him at 856-740-5012 for your surprisingly great rates. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Again, that phone number is 856-740-5012. Individual premiums will vary by customer. All applicants subject to State Farm underwriting requirements. Coming up in our second segment, we're going to wrap up talking about game one. We're going to dive into game two, and we're going to talk about this upcoming weekend with our fighting Phils as we try to get to the 2022 World Series right here on 102.5 Fox Sports The Gambler. This is Bud Light Baseball Brunch. We'll be right back after these messages. Welcome back. Second segment here on Bud Light Baseball Brunch. We're brought to you by our good friends at Premier Window Cleaning, which is the leading window cleaning company in Philadelphia and the surrounding areas. Over 30 years experience, they offer commercial and residential window cleaning, pressure washing, parking garage cleaning, graffiti removal, post-construction cleaning. Every employee is trained, certified, and goes through an extensive background check. At Premier Window Cleaning, your satisfaction level needs to be 100%, as no job is complete until you're happy. With clients like Lincoln Financial Field, Comcast, Chop Roberts, and University of Pennsylvania, you cannot go wrong. For more information and a full list of services, give them a call, 267-534-5198. That's 267-534-5198. Or head to their website, wehatedirtywindows.com. That's wehatedirtywindows.com. Murph, the stat I was looking for in regards to Zach Wheeler, this right here comes courtesy of OptiStats. And, you know, postseason, we don't really have to dive into can you believe it's because there's enough of them for us to talk about during the course of the show while the Phillies are making their run. Zach Wheeler of the Phillies is the second pitcher in Major League Baseball history to throw 7-plus shutout innings with 7-plus strikeouts, no more than one hit allowed in under 100 pitches in a postseason game. He joined Don Larson, who did it in his perfect game in 1956.
Wow.
It's pretty darn good company, if you ask me, Murph.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Don Larson, he did some things in the postseason that should be remembered. And Zach Wheeler's doing the same thing. You know, coming into game two, if you would have asked me, I would have said Aaron Nola was the postseason MVP so far for the Phils. But now I think you have to put Wheeler, you know, right there, probably at 1A and Nola 1B. Harper quietly doing what he's doing, I guess, would be in the mix too. But yeah, Zach Wheeler's, what can you say? When they need him the most, he, with what seemingly is without a heartbeat, goes out there and is able to get the job done. He was able to do it again.
No doubt about it. And that's a comfort knowing that you get him on full rest coming up in game five, because Topper announced today, the Phillies manager, now manager, Rob Thompson, they took the interim tag away from him, as they should have. They did that as they were going into the NLDS. I think that was a great pick-me-up for the team and for the roster. The boys were ecstatic about it. I love seeing all the reaction about it on Twitter. And I know, Murph, you being a part of the team, you know, as a broadcaster and being around, and I know you had told that story about Topper on the way from Houston into St. Louis, how he walked up to each one of you individually, and what kind of guy he is. Phenomenal. I'm ecstatic for the guy. I love his calming influence. I love how his players love him. They enjoy playing for him. And one of the cooler things, and, you know, hey, Dancing on My Own has really, it's been playing in my house, man. Like, I never even knew what the hell this song was. And I'm playing it, I'm humming it, and I'm singing the lyrics. And I feel like that's all great. But my favorite part of this whole ride so far has been clinching in Houston and him going, you know, hey, there's 13 more. And then when they clinch in St. Louis and, you know, he goes to JT, he's like, 11 more, Topper. And then he goes to JT after Atlanta, 8 more, Topper. Phenomenal stuff. What a phenomenal guy. Murph, if you care to expunge on that real fast about Rob Thompson.
Well, I mean, you nailed it. Everybody who's around Rob Thompson you know, likes being around Rob Thompson. He's just a good guy. He always has been. You know, I think we should remind people he's been with the team since Gabe Kapler brought him in as his bench coach.
So 2018.
He's been around a while. We were lucky that he was available. It was when the Yankees were going, or a year after the Yankees were going through their changes. So, again, you know, the Phils got, I believe, a little lucky in that a guy like Rob Thompson was available. They were smart enough to realize Gabe Kapler, first-time manager, needed an experienced bench coach, and certainly Rob Thompson fit that bill. And then smart enough to keep him on when the changes were made. Now, obviously, he and Joe Girardi had a relationship, so that made it a little bit easier. But then when the change was made this last time, Dave Dombrowski, who's pushed every button correctly so far, as he often does, you know, saw something in Rob Thompson, gave him his chance. And Rob's run with it. And as you said, the players – When you see a team galvanized by a manager and a managerial style and a managerial choice, the way this Phillies team was on June the 2nd and afterwards, it's easy to say that he has made a huge difference. There's no argument. And he continues to do so. Just about every decision he makes seems to be the right one. You know, we'll question them ahead of time and then they pan out and you're like, okay, Topper knew something that we didn't know. And, you know, that's often the case. He's a very confident guy, confident in his baseball knowledge, confident in his baseball decisions. And I think that shows as well. You know, he's not worried about what other people are going to think. He's going to follow his gut. And Charlie Manuel, you know, was that way. Charlie was questioned all of the time, especially before he won and even afterwards. And he always went with his gut. And I think that's important for baseball guys. Baseball's a little bit of a different entity when it comes to, you know, being the manager and being in charge and making decisions. And, you know, so far, Rob's, like I said, pushed all the right buttons. And seven more, Topper. You got to push them right for seven more and we'll be in good shape.
Yeah, Charlie had a bigger gut. But, I mean, that's not a
solid point.
Yeah, exactly. but, let's get into game two, because I need to talk about, because you say he's been pressing all the right buttons.
Yeah.
This game, there was a couple that kind of misfired. And listen, a lot of times you put the onus on the players. You know, I know you did that back when Girardi was fired. It's, you know, listen, you're being put in position to succeed. He's giving you that opportunity. He's giving you the baton. It's your opportunity to run with it. The Phillies get out to a 4-0 lead. In the second inning, and a lot of that, you know, had to do with ball luck. I say it all the time: just put the ball in play, and good things happen. Yes. And there was a couple instances in that inning where we put the ball in play, and good things happen. Which is, listen, all well and good. We had a 4-0 lead. I texted my buddies and I said, "Now Nolan needs to have a shutdown inning," and bang, bang, real quick, it's 4-2. Yeah. We get into the fifth inning, and things just start to fall apart. And you know, they go ahead, they put up a five spot. No, it was all started. The rally was really started by the single by Aaron Nola's brother, Austin Nola. I think everybody has heard enough about the whole Nola type thing right now with the brothers facing off against one another. But Austin got the better of his baby brother in that instance, made it 4-3, and things started to spiral. To me, the turning point at inning was when Brad Hand was up 1-2 on Cronenworth. And then he hit him, loaded the bases, and next thing you know, you got a lefty and righty. He gets the 2-2, and I'm listening to John Smoltz because I'm watching on TV, and Smoltz is saying this is an action pitch. You know, if he's going to do something, you don't want to get it to 3-2, and then he throws the ball outside, gets it to 3-2, and I think there was a couple foul balls, and then Drury winds up driving in two. They were even saying that Bryce Harper was on deck. You know, he was going to start the next inning, and you want him to come to the plate with the game still tied. And he, what does he do in his first at bat? He drills one off the right center field wall. But that game to me, Murph, that's the reason why I was saying to Sam before we jumped on air tonight. The part that upset me about that was there was an opportunity there. You're up 4-0. You're up 1-0 in the series. You know, like Rangers been rough his last few starts. You know, so you know you kind of want to have that. You know, in your back pocket, that win in your back pocket going home for three. Really, at that point, you win two out of three. You don't have to go back to San Diego. But we let that one slip away. And I realize good teams, you know, and they're a good team. The Padres are a good team. And they've proven that. They've beaten the Mets. They've beaten the Dodgers. They defeated their kryptonite because the Dodgers were 5-14 against them this year, just like the Mets were 5-14 against us. So I'm not taking anything away from them. But, man, when you have a 4-0 lead and you have your foot on their necks, you have to step down and break their neck in that instance. A lot of people are saying today, why didn't he bring in Alvarado in that inning instead of Brad Hand? Because, like, you know, it's a different situation. It might not be that same way in the later innings. Where are you at from that standpoint? How do you feel about game two?
Yeah, you know, I think maybe the only question for me, the moves that he made were the moves that we knew he was going to make, right? If you're taking out Aaron Nola at that point of the game, you're bringing in Brad Hand. Yeah, could you go to Alvarado? You could. He was asked about that after the game. In his mind, Brad Hand early in the game, Alvarado late in the game. It's what he's been doing for the last couple of weeks. And it's worked for him. So, you know, it's easy for us to, you know, second guess after the fact when it doesn't work. But that was the move. I mean, we were talking about it in the break. All right, what does he do here? If Nola can't get through this inning, yeah, we're going to see Brad Hand. I think it was a decision that was almost predisposed. So to question that decision is a little bit unfair. The only decision that I think maybe you question is when he removed Aaron Nola. Did he remove him a batter too late? Do you take him out two batters earlier and go with the right-hander at that point and try to get through that inning unscathed?
Bring in Brad Hand against Soto instead of against Cronenworth?
Yeah, later, yes. I'm saying remove Aaron Nola even earlier and don't go with Hand. You go with a right-hander, whichever right-hander you choose at that point. Different part of the lineup. You could see that Nola didn't have his command. He didn't even have his velocity at that point. He was struggling a bit. So the decision to bring him, to take him out earlier, perhaps, they waited too long. And then at that point, we're faced with the left-handed pocket of the lineup and bringing in Brad Hand. So to me, that's maybe the only question mark. I probably would have done it exactly the way that Topper did. And so for me to question what he did is a little bit unfair. You said it, you know, at the end of the day, you're bringing in Brad Hand to get Cronenworth out and he hits him. And that changes the inning because now he's forced to face two more batters where the matchups aren't nearly as good for Hand and he loses those matchups and the Phils lose the lead at that point.
Is there any stake in this about the fact that Cronenworth was 0-2 with two strikeouts against Nola and perhaps leaving him in to face Cronenworth? And then if he doesn't get Cronenworth, then he brings in Bilotti for Drury instead of bringing in the lefty. Cause after that, they had righties that were coming up. I mean, obviously you want Bell to bat right instead of left. Because in that instance, what was it? Yeah. He got that hit. He was batting left. He was batting right in that instance. Cause he kind of like inside out at it by Reese up the line. Which was just in a weird swing. It was kind of like a Hunter Pence-esque swing. It was just, awkward.
It was baseball, as you said.
Yes. Yes. But I mean, that was probably the one thing. Like, I know he was 0-2 against Nola, with two strikeouts. To me, I probably would have left him in there, but you know, it's hard to question Rob Thompson for what he's done so far because he has been pressing all the right buttons. And hey, we're coming home. I know at the beginning of the series, you sit there and you go, you know, what I want in San Diego is I want a split. I want 1-1. That's what all of us are going to say, and that's what all of us said. But expectations change, and they change every day. And when you win game one, you have an opportunity to steal the second game and come home with a 2-0 lead. I mean, how many times have the Phillies had that opportunity to come home with a 2-0 lead?
Opportunity has been there, but have they successfully done it? I think I read there was a stat today.
0-8 in game twos.
Yeah, 0-8 in game twos after winning game one. And they still have had a lot of success in those series. So, look, yes, it was a missed opportunity. They were the first two words I said on the postgame show last night. Missed opportunity. There's no way you can look at it any other way. You know, they had it. And Aaron Nola on the hill, they had a 4-run lead. They were gifted those 4 runs in the second inning. They didn't exactly go out there and earn all of that, but they had it and they lost it. And the way they lost it was frustrating. Just to backtrack real quick, I don't think he took Aaron Nola out too early. Like I said,
too late.
My point, if anything, he took him out maybe two batters too late. And but again, I can't question that. I mean, Rob had a plan. He expected in his mind, Aaron Nola is the best guy that he's got to face those two batters. And then he'll go with the left-hander, if need be, to get out a guy like Cronenworth. And it doesn't work out. And that's the players letting down the decision, not so much about the decision. So if we're going to grade out Rob Thompson, you know, he gets an A for yesterday's game as opposed to an A-plus the game before, perhaps. I think you would take that in most instances. So, yeah. If you asked me, if we had lost game one and we won game two, we'd be over the moon right now, right? With a chance to come home and win it at home, in theory. They still have that chance. It's the exact same thing. It just feels worse when you lose that game two and you have to fly back across the country. Believe me when I tell you, not as fun of a flight coming back across the country, coming off of that loss, as opposed to when you're heading out coming off the win. So, but I think that the day off today allows the team to kind of put it behind them. They'll get out there tomorrow and they'll get ready to play. And, you know, if they take game three back in the driver's seat in a big way with two more home games, that's exactly where you need to be. It's exactly where you want to be. And they weren't going to sweep the Padres. I mean, if we're honest, they weren't going to sweep the Padres. So if they lose game two, three, four, or five, it's fine. It doesn't really matter as long as you win the next two out of the next three. That's really what you've got to do.
All right. Well, listen, I think if you're down at the shore, there's only one place you should be watching the game, and that's at the Ludlum Bar and Grill. I mean, you should be hanging out there. If you're down in Seattle, make sure you go over to 4000 Landis Avenue in Seattle City. Yes, it's the old La Costa. You need to get over there and hang out and watch the game and drink some of that La Costa lemonade. It is fantastic. And while you're there, you might as well stay at the hotel because you're going to be drinking a lot of La Costa lemonades. So the hotel is open year-round, and all guests enjoy free Wi-Fi, one free parking spot per room, and complimentary beach tags, even though you're not going to need them right now in October because it's cold. But you need to go there right now. Walking distance to everything. LudlumHotel.com. That's Ludlum, L-U-D-L-A-M, hotel.com. Or call them at 609-263-7829. That's 609-263-7829. For all your reservation, dining, or entertainment questions, the Ludlum Bar and Grill or the Ludlum Hotel, your new oasis in Seattle City. We're going to wrap this up in our next segment here on the other side, and we're going to talk about what's coming up this upcoming weekend at the bank because it's going to be raucous. It's going to be insane. I can't wait to be a part of it right here, 102.5 Fox Sports The Gambler, Bud Light Baseball Brunch. I'm Sack. He's Murph, and we'll be right back right after this. Welcome back. Final segment here on Bud Light Baseball Brunch / Happy Hour on this Friday evening from 8 to 9. If you're hanging out with us and watching the Phillies, you are doing it right. But you know, hopefully I'll see you down there at Citizens Bank Park on Friday night for Game 3. I'll be down there on Sunday for Game 5. Unfortunately, I had tickets initially, Murph, for Saturday for Game 4. But, you know, that didn't work out because I got to take the kids to the Halloween parade over in Williamstown at my parents' house. Being a dad comes first.
That's right. That's right. No doubt about it.
But if you're traveling for football season for the Eagles, you need to travel with the Green Legion because nobody else does it better. We're first in that category. And I will have to say this right here, right now. You will need to sign up for these tailgates early. We sold out in Dallas. We're on our way for the Pittsburgh game coming up. Everything after that, you still want to travel with us, Chicago, Indianapolis, Houston in a couple of weeks on Thursday Night Football. You want to do it with us. Head to the Swamp up in North Jersey to see the Eagles and the Giants on December 11th. I'll be doing the pregame show on the bus on the way up. Make sure you guys check us out. Go to greenlegion.com or call the office at 215-666-5940. That's 215-666-5940. Murph, we're getting a lot of questions here on the board, and one of them is from my good buddy, my brother from the Section 143, Mihir Patel. That's my boy right there. Thoughts on who is going to pitch game four? I'm assuming Mihir means who is going to start game four, because I see there's going to be a lot of pitchers that are going to be available for game four. I know Rob Thompson talked about this today during his media availability. Care to expunge?
Yeah, I think it's the old baseball adage. Johnny Holstaff is going to pitch in game four. And, we've seen Johnny Holstaff be good at times and him be not so good at times. And what I mean by that is, all hands on deck. The the bullpen will be available. And it'll really be virtually everybody, with probably the exception of Nola and Ranger Suarez, who will have just pitched. I would bet.
Well, Wheeler too, because Thompson did say today that there was no chance he would start game four. Now, if he's saying no chance to start game four, do you honestly think that Rob is going to say no chance to start, but put him in the holster?
Well, here's what I think. I think that no chance is where they feel they are right now. And more than likely, we will not see Zach Wheeler in game four. However, if the situation dictates, you know, they've won game three, you know, they're winning game four, they've got an inning to get through, and, you know, maybe it's a tough part of the lineup with a bunch of right-handers, and Wheeler says, I feel great right now, you know, put me in there, coach, I'm ready to play. Then in that scenario, the lockdown, third win of the series, perhaps you see Zach Wheeler. I doubt it, because I really do think they want to save him and use him to start game five if they can. So that said, I think you're going to see Noah Syndergaard, Bailey Falter, one of those guys probably get the start, depending on how Thompson feels about the lineup. Might see Kyle Gibson again in a situation if the score's lopsided one way or the other. But I think what they would like to see is a couple innings out of Syndergaard, a couple innings out of Falter, get you into the sixth inning, and then deploy your bullpen the way you would deploy it in a normal start, whether that be, you know, Alvarado, Robertson, Eflin, you know, some combination of that. Again, depends on the score, depends on the situation, depends on so many different things, which is why it's difficult for the manager to answer questions like that 2 days before. But, like, you know, we're going to see a lot of guys, and I think it'll start with either Falter or Syndergaard. That would be my guess anyway.
Okay, what's your optimism as far as this weekend's concerned? What do you see happening for the Phillies this weekend as far as, like, how things are going to fall for them? I'm not asking for predictions. I don't want you to sit there and say, we're going to sweep them, we're going to go 2 out of 3. Just your level of optimism after game two, that flight on the way home. You were on that plane. You were with those guys. Like you said, there's a big difference between, you know, the plane ride home after a win and a plane ride home after a loss. You saw the guys after the game and you saw them on the plane. Level of focus on their end as well.
Focus is not an issue. Disappointment. They were disappointed for sure. Everyone was. I mean, it's hard to lose a game like that when you feel like you have it in hand. So there was a level of disappointment. And I think that probably lasted until Wheels touched down in Philadelphia. And then you let it go. You have to let it go. This game is too fickle. It happens too quickly for you not to let it go. So the off day today, as I said, I think is helpful for them. Maybe, you know, it dampens the enthusiasm of the Padres a little bit, you know.
Were they entirely off today, Murph, or was there a workout at the ballpark today?
There was an optional workout for the Phils, and there was a workout for the Padres. I think most of the Phillies – I wasn't at the workout today. I think most of the Phillies opted for the off day, which is, I think, what they were encouraged to do. A couple of the guys had to come in and get treatment. A couple of the guys had to come in and do some media responsibilities. But other than that, I think the players stayed home. And I think that was absolutely the right call. I can tell you that I was in no shape to do much of anything today. We got in it. You know, we pulled into the house here at 5:30 in the morning. The sun was just starting to come up. So, you know, you need sleep as much as you need anything this time of the year, and they needed to let their bodies rest. So I think that was a good thing. But they'll be there, you know, bright and early tomorrow and starting to get their bodies ready to go for that 7:30 start. So I think disappointment was the main feeling yesterday, but I think optimism is still the overall feeling for this organization. They feel great coming home. They've got three at home. And I think everyone's really excited that they've got Ranger Suarez on the hill. You might give a slight advantage to the Padres with Musgrove, but we'll see. The Phillies have, you know, swung the bats well against him before. So I think optimism is probably the word of the day.
And what's your expectations from the fan base this weekend? Because I know I'm going to be a part of it in 3 and 5, but Murph, speak to the fans, because you're the one that the fans need to turn to in instances like this. A 1-1 series coming home. You're the voice of the people, Murph. Give them what they want to hear.
Well, normally I would, you know, give them that, hey, that optimistic, we need you kind of spirit. I don't need to do that. I mean, what we saw earlier in the postseason is exactly what is going to happen again. There is no doubt in my mind. It might even be a little bit crazier. So that's what we need. That's what we'll get. It's not even a concern of mine. Get in your seats before first pitch. Maybe that's the only thing I could ask them to do. Come say hi to us in the booth behind 125 and then go get in your seat because they're going to want you there at first pitch. And that energy, I already said it, it helps. It absolutely helps. They'll feed off of it.
7 o'clock is when they start to do player introductions. So make sure that we're in our seats to boo the living crap out of the Padres and welcome to Philadelphia, just like we did with the Braves when they came to town. Set the tone early, Philadelphia. We need every last one of your voices amongst the 45, 46,000. And I'll tell you what, you could hear it with Rob Thompson talking about it after game two about how, you know, 46,000 raucous people. That right there is somebody that you have to listen to and take credo to because it's going to be unbelievable. We've been waiting a long time for this. We are on the doorstep. We are on the cusp of going to the 2022 World Series. We need to bring the alacrity. And I know with seven more topper as far as winning the World Series is concerned, but I've been saying it the last couple days since we lost game two, I want to get to the World Series because as fun as the last couple of weeks have been, we didn't win a division. There's no white flag. I don't need a flag for a wild card berth. I want a blue or a red flag in Ashburn Alley next season. Three more W's makes one of them happen. Seven more topper gets us to where we want to be as world champions and a parade down Broad Street. Philadelphia, do not disappoint me because I will not. I'm losing my voice right now, but I won't lose it on Friday night or Sunday sure when I'm at the ballpark. Yeah. Oh, no. I've got quick bounce back on these vocal cords, Murph. I will be ready to go.
I'll tell you what. Next year when we do this show, I would very much like to be wearing at least – a National League Championship ring. That would be okay. A World Series ring would be even better. But at least that. I've already got my ring size ready to go in case they ask. So that's what it's all about. You know, Topper is going to ask JT after tomorrow night how many more, and we need him to be saying six more, Topper. Six more to go. That's all we need. And if we're hearing that tomorrow night, I think we're in pretty good shape.
Absolutely. Let's go, Philadelphia. Murph, appreciate you, brother. Looking forward to seeing you next week as we discuss, as we do a preview for the World Series. God, yeah. I hope so. But for Greg Murphy and Super Sam Brady and Slash, who will be cutting this up heading into our Friday night show. I'm Chris Sack of Green Legion Radio, and we appreciate all of you listening. And like a 3-1 pitch to Ryan Howard, we are out of here, baby. Everybody, thank you so much for listening and for joining us. And listen, turn your dial, get to the Philly Radio Network, and let's go, Phillies. Let's bring it home, baby. Let's do it. Go, Phillies.